Welcome to the Monday morning edition of the Daily Juice Podcast. I'm your host, Matt Perrault, here off of bettingpros.com. Welcome to the long form edition of the podcast, our second one of these, and I'm looking forward to a really cool conversation with Dave Sharapan from CG Sportsbooks. On Twitter, at SportsBKConsig, a guy who has worked both internationally and domestically for many, many years after coming out of Pittsburgh, going to Penn State. We have a long interview, long conversation coming up about sports gambling, about how to become a better sports gambler, things, mistakes you might be making at the window, and how the markets are going to play out, in particular for Major League Baseball and for the NBA, two very big hot markets here in the month of July for sportsbooks after the sportsbooks reopened after 3 months of being closed. So stick around. That long form interview, that long conversation coming up on the other side of our Daily Juice picks, 15 minutes that we do every day. This is the long version, the 45-minute version of this podcast. All right, so last week, clearly a loser. Week one, we went 10-3. Week two, we go 4-9. So we're still up. But look it, some of you who've asked me, like, are you going to keep track of your units? Because some of the bets are minus 220, some of the bets are plus 150. I'm not going to do that, and I know you might say, Matt, that's not a real proper representation of your plays and picks. We're making picks every day. And to do that, in particular with future wagers, as we're making future bets, that's what I've got, a future pick coming up here for the American League Rookie of the Year. It's just very complicated and very difficult to do that. So just give me a little latitude here. We're just going to do wins and losses, right? Was the pick right or not? And I'm not going to get into the math, into the juice. Ultimately, that's the name of the game, right? To make money. I understand that wholeheartedly, but every day to ask me to do the math on that is just kind of mind-blowing. So just cut me that slack. Wins and losses, make it easy, okay? Yes, it does matter with what you're betting and how much you're winning versus how much you're losing. That absolutely matters. But I'm going to trust you guys to pick and choose which bets of mine you're going to play and which bets of mine you're not. Like, for instance, the dude that bet my Devyson Figueroa, he only bet him to win. That's it. Didn't bet the under. We got both those bets right, but he only bet one side. So he's 1-0. He's 1-0 on my plays, but I had, you know, 12, 13 plays going last week. He played one of them. So that's kind of, you guys are going to have to pick and choose which you want to do, what plays you like of mine, what plays you don't. So I want you guys to enjoy yourselves with this. And if you want to fade my picks, go right ahead. Play my picks, go right ahead. That's the name of the game. However you're making money, that's all I care about. I want to know how you make money. I want to help you find bets you like, maybe find bets you don't like. Maybe after I break down a wager, you're like, that sounds ridiculous. I think he's totally wrong. I'm going to fade it. So if I've done my job here, I've helped you come to a determination as to what bet you want to make. So after getting all the breaks in week one, we got none of the breaks in week two. Patrick Cantlay was plus 110 up against Justin Thomas. And Patrick Cantlay just falls apart on the back nine. Just fell apart. We wound up going 1-4 on the Memorial for our PGA plays because, well, Tony Finau just completely fell apart. Patrick Cantlay completely falls apart after leading the entire tournament over Justin Thomas. Patrick Cantlay, all of a sudden, just on the back nine, falls on his face hard. And that caused us to have all sorts of problems. And I don't know what happened to Patrick Cantlay, but Patrick Cantlay wound up pretty much being a guy who's going to wound up defending champion here in this tournament. Wound up with a 4-over par after coming in going double bogey par. Those three shots he goes over, that wound up he was leading Justin Thomas. He winds up finishing 2 strokes behind Justin Thomas because of that double bogey par. 79 he winds up shooting on Sunday. Incredibly difficult conditions, but oh my gosh, just brutal. So I told you to sprinkle a little bit on some other guys. You know, I mean, John Rahm just ran away with it. Winds up shooting what I thought he would shoot, by the way. He shot a 75. The door was there. The door was open. It was there. We had Finau going up against him. Tony Finau winds up shooting a 78. I figured that John Rahm would shoot somewhere, you know, mid-70s, and I thought John was susceptible for someone to come in and beat him. And fortunately, it was not, you know, it would have been great to have picked, you know, somebody else, but I picked Tony Finau to run him down, and Finau didn't do that. He finishes 3 strokes behind. So unfortunately, that head-to-head did not go, but that was an in-tournament head-to-head. So that was a half-unit play. You know, which I was just like screaming at my TV set for most of this tournament with head to head. So we got bad luck in golf. Tiger Woods, amazingly enough, the most public and square of plays. Tiger Woods is the only bet that cashed on a full unit for us going into the tournament. Bryson DeChambeau did not cash. Patrick Cantlay does not cash. But Tiger against Brooks Koepka does, because Tiger didn't play great on Sunday, but Brooks Koepka played even worse. And both those guys made the cut on the number. So we got lucky there, wound up with a 1-4 mark there. We went 2-2 for the UFC on Saturday. So we wind up going 2-4 overall for the UFC. And then we went 1-2 on our plays for NASCAR, because we had Kevin Harvick over Denny Hamlin for Texas in the Cup Series on Sunday. That did hit for us. So a 1-2 mark after we wound up taking on in the Xfinity race. Austin Cindric winds up beating Chase Briscoe. Chase Briscoe came in third. Austin came in second. It was a race for second place, like we predicted. We called that perfectly. Kyle Busch won the race, depending on what book you were at. We'll talk more about that kind of awkward situation over the weekend as to which book did you bet at? Because DraftKings gave you Kyle Busch if you bet Kyle Busch, but the Vegas books gave you Austin Cindric, because the official race was Cindric, because Kyle Busch wound up being disqualified. So we get to that coming up during the interview here in a couple seconds with Dave Sherapan. So, not a great mark. 4-9 on the week. We're 14-13 now here, and look, we're going to try to get back on the winning track here, okay? Mondays and Tuesdays, until we get to opening day on Thursday, then we start getting into baseball picks. And Thursday morning is going to be a ton of fun. We're going to tiptoe in with half-unit plays for both baseball and basketball. I'll tell you right now, we're going to tiptoe in, because we just don't know what this is going to look like. You got to be careful in the NHL as well coming up in August. We're just not going to go crazy. If you do, I think you might find yourself to be in big trouble. And I am anticipating a lot of volatility. I'm anticipating, you know, we may go 4-0 one night and then 0-5 the next night. I think it's going to be all over the place for baseball betting and for basketball betting. And I think we're going to have to be very careful with how these teams are going to perform without fans in the middle of this pandemic. It's going to look different. The games are going to come off differently, and we've got to be careful with our bankrolls for that reason. So here is a future bet that I want to get into. A lot of people are betting the Chicago White Sox to go over. They're one of the most popular plays here in Vegas. Everyone's read about the $50 million more they have spent. They look at the division, and they're like, the division's garbage. And so they think, well, 31, 32 wins, depending on the book that you're looking at, 31.5, 32 wins for the White Sox. And people in Chicago really feel like the Cubs are going to be bad and the White Sox are going to be decent, and the White Sox could find their way into the postseason. There are big audiences watching the White Sox summer camp against the Cubs, and everyone's going, wow, this is really going to be interesting. And look at this lineup. Look at all the young talent. What might happen here for these guys? You know, do you believe, do you buy in here that we might wind up seeing this White Sox team do something special and nobody really saw it coming, and everyone thought that, you know, they weren't going to be that great, and all of a sudden here they are, and they're contending for a spot in the playoffs because it's a 60-game sprint. It's not crazy, okay? It really, the logic of it is there. I'm just not going to get involved with this because I don't know about the White Sox. What I do know is, in order to win the Rookie of the Year award, you have to have a lot of hype coming in. People have to be paying attention to you. And when you look at the overall consensus odds on bettingpros.com, Jesus Luzardo from the Oakland A's is a pitcher who might, and we'll talk more about him in a second, but he might start in the bullpen for this year. Michael Kopech has some issues, and he could be the guy. I mean, I heard a lot of people saying that, look, Michael Kopech here in a short season, how many starts is he going to make over 60 games? 10? I mean, how many starts would he make? Because he throws really hard, he could have a really low ERA, he could be dominant, and thus he could wind up winning the Rookie of the Year award in the American League. And that's the teammate of the guy who I think you should be looking at really closely, and that is Luis Robert, who is plus 400 across the board for the consensus odds for the American League Rookie of the Year. Now, this is going to be a different type of year, so publicity matters. Have you been watching some of these highlights for Robert, some of these tape measure home runs that he is hitting? This is building for him. This is building, and this is going to make people want to watch him and make people want to pay attention to him, which is a really important piece when it comes to this award in a 60-game stretch. This guy in Robert hit 32 home runs and stole 36 bases across three different levels of the minor leagues for the White Sox last year, okay? So he's got all these people excited. It's plus 400, okay? So he's the odds-on favorite to win the award already. I just think this is an award over a 60-game stretch. As long as he comes in, hits 10 home runs, drives in 35 RBIs, and bats 270, and winds up getting himself, you know, 20 or, you know, maybe 15, 20 stolen bases, I think this is a guy who's going to win this award. And Lizardo was a guy who a lot of people put money on since the books reopened. He went from plus 600 now to plus 400. I mean, bettors have really come in on Robert, and Kopech is a guy who was opening as the favorite, but due to what has happened to him with the off-the-field issues and the fact that we don't know if this guy actually is going to be on a roster, is he going to be playing for the White Sox, pitching for the White Sox? I don't know. So I think at plus 400, I think the play is Luis Robert, and I think you got to go with someone who is on the radar screens of the baseball writers. And look, tape measure home runs, and if he's going to play every day, baseball right now doesn't know what to make of this dude. Getting him out might be very difficult. Not a lot of film on him, a whole lot of power, a lot of speed. And if the White Sox are just a 500 baseball team, I think Luis Robert's going to win the American League Rookie of the Year. So the reason, Lizardo is a guy who very well might have a big year for the A's, but when you look at Bob Melvin and the things that Bob Melvin has said about him, he said, you know, quote, the rotation might be difficult to start with at this point. He said that last week. So he's saying, look, they do the pitcher by committee thing, and they do an opener more than a starting pitcher a lot of times. But, I mean, they don't know what to make of this dude, and they don't want to hurt him, and they don't want him because, I mean, he had coronavirus. So he didn't know he had contracted coronavirus until the A's wound up testing everybody for the first intake, and he tested positive for COVID-19. So he's expected to start out of the bullpen, where he posted a 1.5 ERA with 16 strikeouts, just over 3 walks in 12 innings last year. He also threw 3 innings without allowing a run in the wild card loss to Tampa Bay. So he's getting a full season now, quote unquote. But COVID-19 and the shortened season and how much work has he been doing, I just think our folks are gonna pick and vote for guys who are going to play every day, who could have a big impact on the team, potentially going 500. And I think Luis Robert is going to wind up winning the American League Rookie of the Year as long as he performs a tenth of what they think he's going to do with the hype around this kid right now. Over a full season, I think it might be more difficult, and I might shy away with it because pitchers figure out how to get guys out in the second half of the year. But in a sprint like this, I think taking Luis Robert to be the American League Rookie of the Year is the right play at plus 400. All right, that's our play for Monday here on the Daily Juice. Next, Dave Sharapan, a guy who spent years in sports books, writing sports tickets, taking sports wagers, working behind the counter, working in the risk room. This dude is incredibly intelligent, and you're going to want to listen to the things he has to say. We caught up with him this week to talk about sports gambling and the sports gambling markets. I recommend you follow him on Twitter, @sportsbkconsig, and Dave Sharapan here on the Daily Juice. All right, joining us now here on the Daily Juice podcast, this is a guy who, well, if you've been reading some of my stuff off bettingpros.com, you've been reading some quotes from Dave Sharapan, but I've spent more time talking sports gambling with this guy than probably anybody in Las Vegas, and it's been a real pleasure of mine to be able to do so, and he's been kind enough to give us some time here on our long version of the podcast, a lengthy conversation with Dave Sharapan coming up from CG Sportsbook. Dave, Matt Peralta, how are you, my friend?
I'm good, Matt. I'm real glad to be here and excited for our conversation today.
All right, so let's start with how long you've been in the business and why did you get into the business of bookmaking?
Oh, man. Let's go way back. So I am from Pittsburgh originally and grew up immersed in sports. The next door neighbor of Jack Ham, Hall of Fame linebacker for the Super Bowl. And just kind of grew up playing sports around and got into, went to school at Penn State, which just continued that trend, and majored in broadcast journalism. So graduated and was doing the media hustle, working a job as a sports producer at KDKT Pittsburgh, along with other jobs, because sports producer, as you know, make much money. So you're doing all kinds of things, and I'm covering sports and doing that. And being around the sports world all the time, you're around gambling, you're around betting. In Pittsburgh, it's a way of life, just around it all the time. You're around people and around either bookmakers, people that bet. I got to know some professional gamblers back in the early 90s when it wasn't really a thing. And just saw that way of life and got around some people. So I'm 27 years old, and I get a call that, do you want to go, you know, work at an offshore sports book? Now, I had grown up in Pittsburgh in winter, which I hate to this day, cold, hard winters. Went to school at Penn State, cold, hard winter. And I get the opportunity to move to the Caribbean to basically, you know, learn the book business and do a lot of the media, do the book games and things like that. One of those things that you go, maybe I should do this, don't regret. So the late 90s, we're talking like 97. This is the beginning of the industry, pretty much. And I was there for almost 2 years, about 20 months, between Curacao most of the time, little stint in the Dominican Republic, met a ton of people and got a PhD in the business, is what I like to say. Moved back, and at the day I landed back in Pittsburgh, the temperature was 9 degrees. And the pilot said the current temperature is 9. And I was cold until July. It was brutal. But I lost touch with a lot of people because I worked every day when we were down there. And I was looking for an opportunity to move west and, you know, did some other things, got involved in a handicapping service, tried to stay around the business a little bit, but then got away from it and moved to Phoenix, Arizona. A bunch of different things. And then this business just has a way of pulling you back in. Ironically, my wife and I got together and we had our first child and moved to Las Vegas where her parents lived. And before you know it, I went from a stay-at-home dad to I got broke back into the business and started working at a sports book down at the Golden Nugget back in 2004, wow. Which at the time, Chris Andrews was the director, Bogdanovich was the assistant, and Tom Breitling owned it, the Nugget. We were taking on all comers, and I felt like I was offshore again. It was incredible, the action. We were taking big limits. We were taking anyone that came in and wanted to bet, we were taking bets. And I thought, well, I've hit the jackpot again. And
Can I stop you right there and ask you a quick question about Chris Andrews? What is it about Pittsburgh? Because for anybody who has read Chris Andrews, who is now at the South Point, his book is incredible. It talks all about how he got into the industry and what it was like to grow up in Pittsburgh. You're a Pittsburgh guy. What is it about bookmaking in the water there in Pittsburgh?
Oh, man, it's crazy because there's a lot of people with Pittsburgh ties out in Vegas. A lot of people migrated here. And Chris is just one of many, but he's one of the best, you know. And Jimmy and him are now paired together. Jimmy Vaccaro, at South Point, who's also from Pittsburgh. What is it about Pittsburgh? Everyone knows someone that bets or, you know, a bookie. It's just natural. I mean, like, we were filling out parlay little tip sheets in probably sixth grade. Wow. You know, someone's dad had somebody, you know, where you had to do a four-teamer minimum. And it paid like 6-1, and ties lose, and every game was 3 or 7, you know. But it wasn't a great deal. But yeah, there was a lot of that going on. So it's just a way of life in Pittsburgh. And then, you know, as you come out here, and that's how I met, you know, I met Chris on a whim. I went down through a friend of a friend, and, you know, we interviewed, and he said, you can start this weekend. It was Thursday. He goes, I'll push your paperwork through. We'll get through. And I started the book that Saturday. So one thing led to another. I was at the Golden Nugget for a while. And then when Cantor Gaming, which is now CG Technology, opened up at the M, migrated out to the M, was out at the M for a long time, and then got moved down onto the strip, did a stint at the Cosmopolitan, did a stint at the Venetian, which again, you get a different experience downtown at the Nugget and then off strip at a luxury property, kind of a, you know, smaller place, but an enormous book. And like CG came in with both hands and changed the industry with, you know, introducing accounts and, you know, introducing all kinds of new things that ramped up the industry. And then getting thrown down onto the strip in the heat of it all, saw a lot, did a lot, and then took a stint to go to West Virginia with the expansion of gaming and sports gambling to be the director at the Wheeling Island Casino in Wheeling, West Virginia.
My radio show airs there, so yep, I know it well.
And I lived in Pittsburgh, which is 45 minutes away, so it was like the prodigal son is going to return home, and it didn't turn out that way. I lasted 8 weeks there. There was a lot of hiccups. There was a lot of, with the expansion of gambling, with the expansion of sports wagering, there's a lot of things you have to get through to actually get open and actually pull it off. And some of these companies have been great. The company I was with, it wasn't in the cards. So I moved back to Vegas. I didn't move my family. And CG was kind enough to take me back. And I've been back in the risk room since. It's been 2 years. And we'll see where it goes from here.
You know, when
changing all the time.
Yeah, when you've, because you've seen, and you and I have talked off air about a lot of these things, about the different types of clientele and the different types of people who wind up coming to your sports books. How has that changed? How has sports gambling evolved since you began? And is it the same type of person coming to the window, or has that person gotten either younger or older? Has it changed as to who's getting involved with this practice?
Yeah, it's changed a lot, Matt. I mean, it was so not like seedy, but it was just, there was an underlying current to it being not really accepted back when I first started in the industry. And then it's definitely gotten more, I don't know if it's, I want to say like numbers based or math based or analytical, but it feels a lot different than it did even 5 years ago. Just advancements in the expansion, but also the other end of it, with it going, you know, bringing him to the surface and out of the offshore world so much, and the underlying currents that involve with that, it's become more transparent, which is a welcoming in the novice better as well, because it was always a very intimidating experience in sports books. So you had a lot of people that were even afraid to come up to the counter to ask a question. Well, and a lot of times they were probably treated as a novice, where now customer service is the name of the game. You have to be open to questions. You have to be open to explaining things. And so the knowledge, I think, on both sides of the counter has increased, which has made the game just that much more difficult for the books, I'll say. I don't think the other side of the counter is better now than it ever was, even with the expansion of it and welcoming in all of the new people. I mean, there's shows like yours now that are just out there with giving good advice, whereas before you used to get a lot of bad advice. You used to get a lot of bad opinions, where the books would be like, yeah, listen to them and come and bet at our book, you know. And now it's not so much. You get good with bad and you have to weed it out. So yeah, I think the other side of the counter is better than it's ever been.
How did Daily Fantasy impact the analytical approach, and what did that do to, one, the better, but also the bookmaking? Did it change things at all when DFS became the rage?
I think DFS changed. It's more for individual sports, like, you know, I mean, especially with the pandemic and everything going on, like you see it with golf now, like golf betting, there is a lot. It's a sharp market now, whereas it used to be very not. And individual sports have definitely changed with fantasy. I don't know as much. I think books, a lot of books, not the big ones now, like FanDuel and DraftKings and stuff like that still have a big connection to fantasy. But like, I know books in Vegas tried to do like fantasy stuff and, you know, tried to do props with, you know, just individual game props or season props. That changed because now those markets are available way more than they ever were. But I think some books are reticent to do it because it involves a lot of work and books aren't staffed appropriately, or sometimes the just the handle just isn't there enough to actually win or make a big dent. So a lot of books are just reticent to even do it. They just rather not deal with it.
When you look at where we are right now here and we head into sports and the downtime that you guys had, obviously the sports books not being open here in Vegas for a while and then reopening, I mean, are you seeing you at 50%, 75% where you were? Like, what have you seen from the betting public so far in terms of the activity?
So for us, we're so reliant on people being in Vegas. So until Vegas gets back to where it was, as far as people being in the hotels and being in books, we're not going to see that level again for a while. You know, what we have as far as customers in our books or on account playing this last month and a half than I have in a year. And people are diving in with totals and sides and different leagues and stuff. So I think it's coming. I'll tell you this, there's people betting like it's the playoffs. They're doing parlays. They're involving, you know, the Phillies or the Yankees or the same teams, but it's there. So, I mean, even Major League Soccer, MLS Soccer, it's on every night, and they've established a schedule now for a week and a half or 2 weeks, whatever it is. We're getting action on this stuff like we've never gotten it before. So I think it's there, and we'll see that, you know, with the start of something, hopefully Major League Baseball gets it really going, but the NBA is going to be the telltale sign for me. With the way the NBA schedule is set up, with the games are going to be pretty much all on TV, I'm expecting it to be bonkers as far as action.
Before we get into some of the betting that we've seen for baseball and basketball and where we are here with the NFL, I wanted to ask you, and I know you guys didn't book this at CG, but I'm just curious about advice you would give to somebody when it comes to house rules at different books. Because every book generally has its own house rules. And over the weekend, we saw the Xfinity race where DraftKings, they paid out a win for Kyle Busch, while other books in Vegas said, no, we're taking the official result, not the actual result that we've seen here. So where are we going to be here? You know, what would you recommend going forward for people who are getting into the space, who are new gamblers when it comes to learning the house rules for the book that they go ahead and use?
The house rules are such an important thing from my experience going to West Virginia and draft house rules for a place that wasn't even open yet. I know it's an overreaching task, and it involves lawyers. It involves things that have to be written, stipulations that have to be set up for situations. The NASCAR is unique because of this post-race inspection that they do. I think most books have taken the stance that you have to wait until the post-race inspection. NASCAR does a very strange thing where it's unofficial results, and that's what you see, but you can't grade it. Like, we wait 2-3 hours until there's an official race to grade those things. So it's very important. Baseball, there's a lot of things going on. If you bet run line or total and the game doesn't play a full 9 innings, it's a refund. A lot of people don't know that until they go to collect their wager the next day and get told that. The listed pitchers thing has been a headache for years for baseball wagers. Things are changing. There's so many things involved in house rules and wagers that you really pay attention. And if you have a dispute or question, it's not a fight at the beginning. Just try to understand it from both sides. And usually the books will work with you. And then there's books that are paying out like different things as a sign of goodwill and to set up, you know, future business. They'll likely do that as long as you're not trying to, you know, deceive anybody. I think the disputes can be resolved for the benefit of both sides.
When it comes to starting, though, like, is it hard to find the house rules? I mean, a lot of times if someone's betting $10 at a time, they're not going to care all that much. But when you start getting into the higher, you know, four-figure type wagers, you probably should be reading it. Is it available? Do you have to make that as available as possible? Is it a state-by-state thing when it comes to posting house rules?
I know in Nevada they have to be posted and they have to be available. So they're available likely physically in the book. Mm-hmm. I know you can find them on most apps as well. On the login screen, there's a tab usually that says house rules that you can find. And if there's any dispute, like all of our disputes in Nevada, if it goes that far, it goes to gaming. And there's, you know, a hearing. You have to submit your side. They submit their side. It's like a small claims court type situation. Right. Ideally, it doesn't go that far. But, yeah, they should be available. And, like, with these apps now, I mean, it's getting to the point now where you're going to be able to stream games. You're going to be able to get scores. You can certainly get the house rules pretty much on every app.
All right, so let's talk about some sharp money here with baseball starting up on Thursday. So it looks like we're going to begin the season. Now, how long we're going to go, we'll see. But what are you guys seeing for 60-game betting here? Is it typical or atypical in terms of where we are in the futures market with professionals and just overall handle so far going into baseball for you guys?
Usually at this point, Matt, we're really in a really good from a future standpoint, you know, odds to win the pennant, odds to win the World Series, but we were closed. So it's crazy for like number of tickets. It's the Dodgers, it's the Yankees, it's the Cubs, it's the White Sox. Those are the top four as far as like tickets. Nothing surprising. They're followed by the Cardinals and the Twins, the Angels. It's very typical. At least for the books in Vegas, to have those teams be at the top. As far as like liabilities, those teams we actually would lose to at this point. And usually before the season, there's only one or two that you're really kind of stuck to. And they're usually the bad teams. And I went through and listed which teams we would be a minus to if the season started right now. The White Sox won just because of the number of bets. There's been just a lot of talk about the White in a much better lineup and pitching that's going to keep them in the game. So quantity of tickets there is almost equal to the Cubs, which has not been the case for years, but it is right now. But then the other teams we lose to are the Mariners, the Orioles, the Tigers, the Royals, because they're the worst teams in the league. Their odds are the highest, and it doesn't take much to make those teams a loser. So I don't know if, you know, Baseball Reference or you know, whoever comes out with these somewhat reports that projected wins and things to make the Padres a team that can actually win a wild card. I don't think they can supplant the Dodgers as the division winner, but they're going to be in the mix, and a lot of people are gravitating towards them betting-wise.
You mentioned that the NBA is going to be the real big, you know, bell cow here and measuring stick as to where we are. I mean, what are you guys expecting, and how difficult is it when a league restarts and it has the interest that the NBA does from a betting perspective? How hard is it to handicap and to bookmake on a league that's going to start back up again and go right to the playoffs, but in a bubble with no fans?
It's going to be really tough, but I think what we keep talking about is we're on equal ground. I don't think anyone on either side of the counter really knows what to expect. We took bets on the Pelicans in the first, I believe it's the Jazz. They laid the 2, then the half. We got all the way 3, and then Zion had to leave the bubble. And now that line is off the board. We don't know when it's going to come back up. We don't know what it's going to be. It all depends on whether he's going to play or not. So just one example, but you'll see. I mean, like, we'll get ramped up quick. It's going to be fast because there's games every day. Yeah. And it's going to be quick 8 games to get to that playoffs. By then, you'll start to see some edges. You'll start to see some sharp moves. I think the totals are going to be a complete guess right now. We don't know what to expect as far as the totals because there's zero home court advantage. No one has any real knowledge of practice and what's going on other than the little stuff that you're hearing here and there. So I think the totals, if you start to see some serious, like what we're going to do is I think we're going to overmove stuff. We're going to, it may create middle opportunities, but we're going to take our chances on games not falling and getting middled. And we're going to move to try to prevent being overloaded on one side. Because if you get over 214 and over 215, over 216, we may just go from 214 to 216 and a half and see what happens. Try to get back on both sides.
What would you recommend from a player perspective when it comes to this NBA, if you guys are going to be tiptoeing and you're not exactly sure, is the best advice to give to a player that look at you got to wait and see and take a week or two before you really start to bet like normal?
I know myself, that's exactly what I'm going to do. it's no automatic, like, you know, people are going to bet the Lakers because they're the Lakers. Well, the Lakers may take a wait and see approach. I mean, they only need to really win three games, maybe four of the eight, to clinch that one seed. You really got to see the lineups. You got to see the rotations. I don't know if guys are going to get the full minutes that they, you know, normally get. Yeah, I think the NBA is going to be a real tough handicap the first couple weeks, and it's going to be fun, and people are going to play it.
So the NFL is going to start camp here coming up at the end of the month, and we got a whole bunch of, you know, protocol issues and questions, but they're looking like they're going to go here. Where are you guys in terms of the NFL future wagers? And I know you guys are down a little bit, but in terms of when you came back on, are people still coming back in here on the NFL? And what do you expect the NFL to look like betting-wise this fall?
The NFL is still king, and it is king for futures by far. I went through and looked. Chiefs, Ravens, and the Cowboys, numbers 1, 2, and 3, as far as number of tickets. The Raiders are number 4 here in Vegas. And then the Buccaneers are number 5. So people are betting those teams, and there's a lot of reasons why. You can see that. And as far as liability, our number one loser is the Raiders. And it's simply because they're here. It's the local team. And for years growing up, I knew a lot of guys that were bookies in Pittsburgh that rooted against the Steelers every week because they needed against them. And you're going to see that here in Las Vegas for sure against the Raiders every week. Huh. It's just incredible how travelers still come here and place wagers on their teams before they go home. So before we even made this phone call, I saw bets on the Vikings. I saw bets on the Packers. I mean, we take them for 12 months. We put them up before the Super Bowl is played and have them up until the Super Bowl is played. So you have 12 months to take future wagers, and it's a huge, huge advantage that, you know, we were closed for 3 months. We missed out on some future wagers, but don't cry for the books. They're going to be okay.
So on my radio show, you and I talked about the Raiders a little bit. I wrote some stuff. I did a pick on the future over 7 wins for the Raiders here on this very podcast. I think that they're going to win 8 games. You came on my radio show. We had the very same conversation about the Raiders. And tell the story about what happened immediately after you and I got off the phone for the radio show talking about the Raiders.
It was hilarious. So we did the show. You said you like the Raiders open wins, and I said 7.5, and we have yet to take a goal on the under. And we're like, oh, I don't know if I like that. I'm still going to go over. So within an hour of the show airing, someone walked into a book, I believe it was Cosmo, a limit weight under 7.5. And I just started laughing because I said, oh, there's the power of the, oh, they must have been driving around. Maybe listened. They heard this guy come on and saw the Raiders over and said, you know what? I'm going to stop in. And it was literally the first major we had under 7.5. So you and everyone else against this, at least with us on the Raiders season wins 7.5. And only moves. We didn't, you know, we're not going to move the number. Stay 7.5 for a while because the quantity of bets that just keep building up on that thing over.
Unbelievable. All right, before we wrap up, Dave, if there's one piece of advice and one mistake that you see amateur bettors make all the time, what's the mistake and what's the advice as to not doing it?
Oh, that's twofold. One is parlays are fun, but parlays aren't a way to make money. You just see it consistently over and over and over. Stay away from them as much as possible, unless you're having fun and you just want to, you know, get action and you want to spend a little bit to try to make a score. But don't expect to win those and expect to have to grind it out. The other piece of advice is bankroll management is key to success in this business, both from the book standpoint and the better standpoint. You got to kind of, you know, keep the bets consistent maybe an extra percent when you really feel you have an edge or you have a number that just you know is that good and you can get it. And then, you know, as you win, you increase your bankroll. But as you lose, you have to back it down. Don't ever chase. I've seen it for years. You can't chase losses. That it just makes it worse. And when you win, enjoy the wins, but still stay consistent. I see people over betting all the time after a couple of wins. And when things are hot, it goes bad quick, and then you're back behind the eight ball.
It's great advice in bankroll management. Do you believe in terms of, you know, the percentage, the 5% of your bankroll should be pretty much what you're putting into play with every wager? Is that a number that you like, or do you like less or more of that?
It all depends where you're at. You know, if you have a substantial bankroll and you don't spread yourself too thin. You don't have to bet every game. That's the advantage of being the better. The book has to put up lines for every. You see people just because games, they, you know, six of them. You don't have to do that. You can bet two, bet the right amounts. Do that. And when you don't, it doesn't have to be a certain percentage. It's just what you're comfortable with. And then make sure as you're winning, you increase it a little bit. And as you're losing, you decrease it a little bit.
Dave, thank you for the time. This was a ton of fun. Really appreciate you coming on the Daily Juice.
Thanks for having me, Matt. We'll talk soon, buddy.
All right. Hopefully you enjoyed that conversation with Dave Sherapin from CG Sportsbook. Sorry about my mic during that interview. I swear I'm going to get this right at some point. We fixed the interviewee. The interviewer, like me, I got to fix that. So I think I figured it out. I thought I did, but I guess I didn't. So hopefully next week for the long form, we'll have it completely perfect. But if you've not subscribed to this podcast, please, please, please do so. Wherever you get your podcasts, we're back every single morning. And we've got Major League Baseball coming up on Thursday. It's a big week for us. I'm your host, Matt Perrault. Follow me on Twitter, at SportsTalkMatt. And we are back tomorrow morning for a Tuesday's Daily Juice off of BettingPros.com.